when it comes to taxes, there's two types of you've got tax avoidance and tax evasion. That's the main thing to differentiate between tax avoidance. You know, that's going shopping at duty free. You're just using the rules or the loopholes, the benefits to your advantage. But the main thing is tax evasion v tax avoidance. If it's evasion, you are evading taxes and basically usually some kind of fraud or deception in construction. You know.
Welcome to another episode of the Build Smart Blueprint. Really excited for this one this week. We've got Joshua Tharby on the podcast this week. So Joshua is an expert when it comes to, I'd say, let's get into it in terms of how we're going to word it, but I'd say optimizing tax efficiency when it comes to entrepreneurs, particularly in the property space. And a lot of us guys in construction, we dabble in property. So I think there's lots that we can kind of get into. So Joshua has actually written a book on the topic of tax efficiency. And if you know his face, it's probably because you've seen him a lot on social media. Joshua really, I believe, speaks openly about his views around tax efficiency, and I'm really, really hoping that we can spend some time to get into that as well, in terms of kind of the mindset around tax efficiency and some of the ethical considerations as well. So welcome to the podcast, mate.
Absolutely, yeah, pleasure to be here.
Cool. So can we actually start with I think a lot of us that are not accountants from a financial background, I know you are, they just glaze over when you hear the word tax, and it's not particularly a topic that you know, we spend much time on. What is it for you that kind of has attracted you, not only because obviously you I believe you're an accountant by kind of yeah. background, but meant you kind of honed in on kind of tax and tax optimization as a particular area of expertise?
Yeah, well, I guess it comes from a few different perspectives, really. The first one is, well, actually, as an accountant, as a business owner, it's more actually what do clients want and what do they care about? Most accountants focus on just being accountants, whereas, you know, quickly after setting up my own company and my own firm, I realised that most clients really care about tax. They don't care about what accounts you've got to do, what your VAT return, when's it going to be done. They don't care if you process payroll. All of that stuff is just, you know, that's the basics. They need that done. But really what clients care about and what they value is tax. So in terms of how we separate ourselves, our USP was actually most accountants do kind of play things vanilla. They don't really work in your favor. That, you know, a lot of them are just glorified form fillers for HMRC, whereas actually clients where they can see that you actually are trying to help them pay less in tax, and you give that proactive tax advice, that's really what clients value. So quickly, you know, we specialized in that because it's what clients want, and actually it gives us a tangible return on investment. If a client's paying us a couple of £100 a month, but we've saved them £10,000 a year in tax, we can easily justify our fees. Whereas most accountants are actually a cost; they don't deliver a positive ROI.
And I know you. I think in both your book, but also on your website, in terms of your practice, you kind of focus mainly on property, and you, it seems like that's been a kind of magnet for you. Is that because there's more opportunities there, or is that just because the type of people that are in property are usually also could benefit most from that? What's the link there?
Yeah, well, I started in property just because when we started, it's a case of, for our marketing side of stuff, for marketing, the business, I'm a property investor myself, so I knew that there weren't too many property specialist accountants out there that fully understood the intricacies, group structures, VAT, stamp duty, all the different reliefs. There was a gap in the market for somebody that was going to specialise in property and helping property investors pay less in tax. And then the second side of that as well is because we specialise just in property, we've built a business around that. So we've got very kind of efficient standard operating procedures. Whereas if you are working with so many different types of businesses, it's actually hard to know everything about everything and actually deliver that as well as a service. So we specialise in property investors because there was a gap in the market. I've always been a property investor for the past kind of 10 or so years, so I was naturally interested in that area anyway. So it just made sense to specialise and focus on property investors because there's plenty of them out there that they need a good accountant.
What drew you to kind of, like, were you always posting on social media about your kind of thoughts around tax, or was that something that, you know, only after a while and was it driven by the business? Because I watched some of your content, and that's kind of how we got in contact, but I kind of get the vibe that it's not just about like business for you, like you're into entrepreneurship and you want to kind of share your thoughts and all of that. So I'm interested to hear what draws you to kind of communicate and share your ideas
to,
like this.
To start with, it was literally, I'll take you back kind of what, six and a bit years ago, I needed to get clients, literally just quit my full-time job, had a little bit of money that was going to see me 6 months, and I needed to get clients ASAP. I didn't have any reputation, no name, you know, no contacts to tap up, no previous clients I could take from my old employer or anything like that, so I needed to get clients. And I realized that the best way of doing this was through social media. So definitely to start with, for the first few years, social media was a tool to grow the business. So I was just trying to give value away for free, hope that people see my content, think, actually, this guy knows what he's talking about. He's saying stuff that my accountant isn't saying. He's saying it in absolute plain English. He seems like a great guy to deal with. And then that's what worked to help grow the business. But then over time, the business has grown and grown and grown, and it's, you know, it's in a good position. So especially, I know you mentioned kind of sharing thoughts and about saving tax and everything else, being quite vocal. Well, actually, we don't need to use social media now to necessarily get clients. We still do. But actually, it's just a platform to kind of share my thoughts and kind of what I think should be going on in the world of tax and the UK and everything generally.
What would you say, have you seen a pattern of like, because I can imagine you have a pretty wide range of people watching your content, and often there's probably very few of them are actually clients, you know, in terms of like that demographic. But I'm interested, what do you think ruffles the most feathers in terms of the type of stuff you talk about and is maybe the most, let's say, controversial? Is it around that, like, specifically reducing the tax bill?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest one almost that gets me the most stick, or kind of, especially when you post on like TikTok, Instagram, is the Dubai side of things. So when we help people move to Dubai, basically leave the UK, stop paying... I'm sure we'll discuss it, but obviously when you're in the UK, UK resident, you know, you can do a few things to save tax, but ultimately if you're living in the UK, you're still going to be pretty much paying a decent amount of tax if you're making good money. So really, for a lot of people, if they've got wealth, the best way to fully reduce taxes is to actually leave the UK, become non-UK tax resident. So when we kind of promote that side of the business in terms of leaving the UK, taking up tax residency, Dubai, Thailand, Malta, Cyprus, no matter where it is, that's where that definitely ruffles a lot of feathers. You know, you post that on TikTok or Instagram, even, you know, so many different kind of comment, parasite, pay your taxes, you should be contributing your fair share, all that, you get lots of negative stick around that.
Can we like delve into that a little bit? And maybe when we do that, I think it'd be useful for both myself and the listeners for some definitions around, like, firstly, maybe the difference between tax efficiency and tax avoidance, and where those two are. But then also kind of, I think if you could just give your perspective and your views around, and perhaps your responses to people that would basically be saying, well, if you're making money in the UK, you know, you should be keeping it here and putting it back into the system and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I guess the best place to start there would really be, so tax efficiency and tax avoidance, they're probably in most respects the same thing. When it comes to taxes, there's two types of you've got tax avoidance and tax evasion. That's the main thing to differentiate between tax avoidance. You know, that's going shopping at duty free. You're just using the rules or the loopholes, the benefits to your advantage. That's putting money in your ISA, that's putting money in your pension. That is considered tax avoidance. You know, if you've got a large profit at the end of the year, just before the end of the year, you put some money into your pension, you've avoided taxes, but it's completely within the rules, it's completely within the framework, and there's no issues around that. What HMRC can find a problem with is where it's aggressive tax avoidance, if it's artificial. But the main thing is tax evasion v tax avoidance. If it's evasion, you are evading taxes, basically usually some kind of fraud or deception. In construction, you know, the most common form of tax evasion there would be cash and handwork. That's the stuff where HMRC, if they ever pick up on it, they will come down hard. You've got penalties, interest, and in some severe cases, you could be looking at jail time. So tax avoidance is using the legal frameworks, reliefs, the system to your advantage. Tax evasion is where there's some kind of criminal element. And it's, you know, they all often say the difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion is the thickness of a prison wall, because evasion could land you in prison. Avoidance is absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good way to put it. And actually, I think the idea of talking about the duty free, you know, that's a very kind of relatable way to communicate it to many people, right? Everyone can kind of relate to that. Yeah. Whereas some of the strategies and things you talk about, the idea of, you know, moving to a different country and doing business in one, for a lot of people, that's completely foreign, and that's kind of, yeah, oh, you know, that's the 1% sort of thing.
It's the exact same concept. If you're going to the duty free, getting your aftershave and your alcohol there, you're no different to somebody else who's a wealthy taxpayer. Usually where people kind of come from when they criticize, and that's just because somebody's in a position that they're not. Okay, yeah, you can afford to move overseas, avoid tax, you've got a large enough business, and that's where the hate comes from, because it's a form of jealousy. Whereas actually you're using the rules to your advantage. It's no different to getting some alcohol from duty free because it's cheaper than it is in the supermarket.
I have actually seen, like, because I actually watched some of your longer form content where you it's very common you'll say, look, if you owe the HMRC something, they're the first people you need to pay. Like, kind of basically do not fuck around, like, pay them. So, and, you know, I can testament to the content you're putting out there is very much about, if you owe the HMRC something, pay them. The move to Dubai for you, was that a strategy for yourself to basically live the thing that you preach? Or
Yeah, 100% it was. So it's just a case of, well, actually, the good thing about Dubai is it's a fantastic lifestyle out there. It's so much better than the UK. Every day feels like you're on holiday, pretty much. And then you combine that with the fact that you can run a business remotely from Dubai. And by the time you do that, you have a better quality of lifestyle. You can actually do that and save hundreds of thousands in tax. It's an absolute no-brainer. But one of the main benefits of being in Dubai is certainly the taxes.
What kind of restrictions apply to you, and maybe, you know, it's not a one size fits all, but I think for guys, like, it sounds like you were born in the UK, you probably still have family there. What restrictions apply to you in terms of, like, being able to come back? Is there any limitations
point of view? Absolutely are. The biggest limitation is time limitation. So in order to be non-UK tax resident, there's a limit on the number of days you can spend in the UK. It can get complicated in terms of determining those number of days. Usually it's a mix of how many ties you have to the UK, the reason for going overseas, are you working full-time overseas, do you have an overseas home? But for the vast majority of people, you're probably allowed around 90 days in the UK per tax year. Then as long as you spend, you know, the other 6 months or so in Dubai, you'll be tax resident in Dubai, non-tax resident in the UK, and you'll pay taxes in Dubai, which is 0% income tax, 0% capital gains tax. And if you've got a company, they're just 9% corporation tax.
And I guess, like, simple, we were talking about this off air, but for most of the Brits kind of living in Dubai, usually when it gets insanely hot there, that's the time to come back over to the UK. And what time of year is that? Is that in the summer?
Yeah, I'd say any time from June, July, August, September, they're probably the 4 months to be outside of Dubai. But that's a good thing about that. You're not paying taxes. So actually, if you spend six, seven, eight months in Dubai, paying zero taxes, then you spend those 3 or 4 months in Europe and the UK. And actually, when we speak to some clients about it, it's basically the tax man's paying for your holiday, because you're living in Dubai, you're not paying any taxes. So you can afford to travel for those 3 or 4 months because you've got so much extra capital as a result of paying 0% income tax.
Yeah. And would... let's say a sort of fictional scenario of a building contractor that has a company based in the UK, perhaps maintenance contracts with local authorities in the UK. All the businesses in the UK, the clients very much want to pay a UK entity because of defect liabilities, insurances and all that. The idea of the owner being overseas from a limited company point of view, would you have to move your company to, for example, a company registered in Dubai, or is that separate?
You wouldn't. It's a completely separate entity. So you can still keep that company. And indeed, probably a lot of the people that we help move to Dubai do. So they keep their company in the UK. I've still got a UK company. Our accountancy firm, JSM Partners, still a UK company, deals with UK clients. And that pays its UK corporation tax. But even you being based personally in Dubai, you still have a massive income tax advantage of, you can take out all the money you want from your company without paying any extra tax over and above that corporation tax. And if you still have an active role in your business, so if you are genuinely running the business from Dubai, you're still doing the work there, then actually your company can pay you a salary. It's got to be market value. It can't be excessive. And by that, it's basically what you would pay somebody else to do your job. If you're a managing director of a decent sized construction firm, it's easily six figures. That's then deductible in the UK, saving you that corporation tax, and that's tax free in Dubai, 0% income tax. So there are still ways to definitely reduce the taxes, even with the company still being based in the UK.
And if, like for me, for example, I travel around as well, not always in the UK, but I have two dogs, I have a young one. I want to be able to nip back to the UK a little bit quicker if needed, but also logistically it's more challenging for me to, you know, with pets as well, you know, it's a bit traumatic for them to be on the planes. Well, and all
well,
that.
What they do in Dubai of all places is a small tangent. You can get private jet charters, a company called Canine Jets. And what they do is they basically hire a decent sized private jet. Everybody clubs together. So they do kind of one or two flights a month. And it's only about, say, $8,000, $10,000 a ticket for you and up to two dogs.
Really?
So yeah, that's what quite a lot of people do in Dubai is, yeah, they get their dogs on private jets.
You can hear the dog barking in the background, getting excited.
I like the idea of that.
Yeah, I've actually written that down. Is it just Dubai?
Yeah, it's just Dubai. They operate from, that's pretty cool, from London.
Well, the reason for me framing that question was, and you teased it a little bit earlier, but what other options are there for people that are perhaps, you know, want to do something closer to home? And a secondary question to that is, are the restrictions the same in terms of how much time you can go in the UK? Is it blanket 90 days, you know, regardless of where you call home, or does it vary depending on the location?
Yeah, so it's pretty much always that 90 days in the UK, because the first issue when it comes to minimising the UK taxes is your UK tax residency. So it's if you're in the UK 90 days or less, then you shouldn't be UK tax resident. And then the rest of the year, well, you can, depending on where you spend, that will be where you're most likely tax resident. You spend more than 6 months somewhere, usually you're tax resident in a country and you'll pay taxes there. There are quite a few good options even around Europe. Spain, they've got some pretty decent tax treatments. You've got Beckham's Law, which basically means that you usually your foreign income is exempt. So any dividends you receive from your UK company can be tax-free in Spain. Cyprus, I think it's just 5%. Malta, similar, kind of tax-free or 5%. Thailand, you can get tax-free as well, as long as you don't remit the dividends in the same year that you receive them. There's quite a few different options around there. Hong Kong is another good one. But there's an opportunity for people that do want to travel but also pay no taxes, is it's actually quite possible to be tax resident nowhere. So if you spent 3 months in four different countries, the chances are you wouldn't fit the criteria to be tax resident in any of those countries, and as a result, you wouldn't pay tax anywhere.
All right, okay, I've never heard that. So what? So you're just like a nomad. You just
exactly. Yeah, nomad. Yeah, exactly that. That's because you physically are. You not don't meet the requirements to be tax resident in any given country. So no country has the right to tax you.
And is that something that you've worked with clients?
Yeah, we have quite a few clients do that.
Wow. I mean, these things that you talk about, are these typically something that you would always employ a specialist to help you do? Like, is it feasible for somebody that isn't, you know, specialist, or to use your kind of standard kind of accountant or lawyer to help you with this? Like, how critical is it to use a specialist for these things?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you do probably, you always need a specialist. I'd imagine even now for us, we've got quite a few of our clients from accountants, because it's that kind of stuff where actually most accountants, they do not deal with this stuff. They don't know about this stuff. So it is quite a specialist area when it comes to the tax planning.
And is it, and this is not so much like now veering away from the idea of necessarily moving to a different location, but just the idea of being more tax efficient. Any specialist is going to charge, right? And
yeah,
you would expect a specialist to charge specialist rates. There would be, I think, some sort of threshold that, like, you need to earn a certain amount to make it worth it for the fees the specialist is going to charge to offset the benefit you're going to get, kind of thing. So have you, over the years, like, worked out, okay, and maybe you've got in your business, like, a qualifying, if you're not making X amount per year, then it's not really worth kind of utilizing a specialist, and you may as well just kind of either do it yourself or just pay the taxes like normal.
Well, working with a specialist isn't necessarily too expensive. You're probably looking at a couple of £1,000. So the fees there aren't so bad. It'd be a case of, well, actually, if you're looking to move overseas and be, and the primary driver of that is tax. Typically, we say if you're earning about £100,000 a year, that's about the break-even point for moving to Dubai, especially because of the tax savings. If you're earning that in your own business, you're probably paying around about £30,000-£35,000 in tax. And when it comes to getting set up in Dubai, slightly higher living costs in some areas if you're coming from somewhere outside of London in the UK. So that's probably about the break-even point. As soon as you start touching six figures, that's when you break even. But then as you go up to that, 200, 500, that's really where the tax savings speak for themselves.
Interesting, because I actually was expecting you to say a much higher figure in my head. I not much higher, but I was thinking you would say sort of the £500,000 mark would be where you'd be breaking even. Perhaps in my head as an idea of, okay, those are the people that would bother, yeah, you know, investing and doing that. Because I also imagine, maybe this is in my head, but if you're pursuing a certain tax strategy, especially in Dubai, for example, the cost of living there in that particular location would be inflated because there's certain, level of income people going there to live that specific life. So that kind of also has to be factored into like how much it's going to cost to optimize it. And that's going to essentially eat out of the benefit that you're supposed to be getting, right?
Yeah, exactly that. And Dubai is expensive, but it's similar prices to London in most respects. So, you know, you can get a decent apartment, 1,500, £2,000 a month. Your day-to-day expenses are pretty similar to the UK. So especially if you're going out there as a single person, have £100,000, you're probably almost slightly better off at very worst break even.
So, and you sort of teased it before, but would you pretty much say that if leaving the country is off the cards, you're massively like, where would you put the cap on what you're potentially, I'm going to say like overpaying in tax, where you could be kind of putting that back in your pocket? Like, where, how significant is that, that once you make the step to try and run your firm from overseas?
Yeah, it's massive just because of the potential upside. So in the UK, as a business owner, most people probably don't take out more than 100,000, or it's usually husband and wife, 50k each, because you just go into that higher rate band and you're pretty much given 40% away in taxes. And so most people just leave it in their company, build wealth, probably start to invest in property and other things along the sidelines. So on paper, you're building wealth, but you're living a very, very modest lifestyle because you don't want to take it out. Whereas that's the good thing about Dubai offshore relocation, is you can just take the full amount out. If your business does £500,000 a year, if it's UK based, you still pay a small amount of corporation tax. But then that £400,000 or so you've got left, that goes straight into your back pocket, which then means you start to build wealth in your personal name and actually spend it and enjoy it. Whereas in the UK, it's very much, you can make good money. It's easy to make money in the UK, but actually to keep it and have it in your own personal bank account without a massive tax bill, that's near on impossible. So it's just a completely different lifestyle. In the UK, you're building wealth on paper. You might sell out one day, get a capital event, and then you'll have some money. But in Dubai, it's very much actually you work hard now, that money's straight into your pocket. You're not worried about paying taxes on it.
It's interesting because I find, even myself, but a lot of the time when we're talking to business owners, there's this need, this want or hyper kind of optimization to, or this need to hyper optimize like profitability, but nowhere near as much effort to look at like optimizing like how much you're paying in tax. And often there's things that are just sitting there that you could easily do, but also because the majority of business owners are lifestyle business owners, they're doing it for a lifestyle, that often you could change the business model. Because I think a lot of guys listening to this that run construction firms are thinking, well, I couldn't run my firm online. But actually it could just be a matter of changing the way the business runs so that you can run it online, so that then you can optimize certain things, because at the end of the day, a lot of it does come down to like how much money you're going to have in your pocket at the end of the year.
And if you could find a way, especially when we start talking about the £500,000 profit mark, it's just so easy to justify the change to Dubai, because if you had £500,000, you wanted to, you know, buy your dream house, go on a decent holiday, buy a nice car, you have to take that money out to actually have that high quality lifestyle. And in the UK, you would actually lose about 50% of that in taxes. Once you paid the corporation tax and your income tax and your dividends, you would be left with about £250,000 out of a £500,000 profit. Whereas you go to Dubai, you make £500,000. Well, actually, you've got £500,000 in your bank account, pretty much. Which means you can either work half as much or you can retire in a couple of years. We've got clients where we've helped to move to Dubai. They've got large construction companies, property investment companies here. And they're going to Dubai not to necessarily have a better quality lifestyle, which they will have, but it's just to build wealth. So they can get some money outside of their company so they can come back in 5 years' time, buy the house that they want to buy without getting absolutely hammered in taxes if they were to take it out as a UK resident.
If you, because often the first step when you're growing your company is you buy your own place, like in the UK. That's very common here, especially there's so much focus here in the UK about buying houses. Once you move, can you still kind of have that as your residential property, or does that change anything in terms of then having to classify that differently? And should that, is that something one would consider in their situation?
Yeah, so it can do. So having a home in the UK can count as a tie and actually give you less days in the UK, depending on your reason for being overseas. But if you move overseas for full-time employment, you can still come back to the UK in 90 days and have that house available. So you can still keep if you structure it correctly, you can still keep a house in the UK.
Okay, so the real potential limiter is actually more about how much time you've got back in the UK. Yeah. That's interesting to know. Property is an area that most builders find themselves getting into once they're in that transition of getting off the tools, getting away from the business, trying to build an asset. I'm curious whether you would suggest any other areas that construction entrepreneurs could look to invest their money into, and not just look at, I think property is the easy one because obviously what often happens is you do building work for developers and you see how much they're making and you think, fucking hell, I could do that. And why don't I just do that? So that's why they kind of go there. But are there any other areas that you think maybe beyond property could be, especially tax efficient methods of investing the money you're making in your business?
Yeah. Property is always a good one, especially for construction entrepreneurs, because essentially you know what you're doing. So you know that when you buy this house, you do this work, you find a plot, you build this house. It's especially the main risk when doing construction work and property investing generally, especially where you're adding value, is actually the work gets done wrong, you go over budget, which comes from inexperience in property. Whereas most construction entrepreneurs, they don't have that because they've built countless how many houses for other people, just not themselves yet. So that's why property is always a good way, because you know that you can just make, you know, not quick, easy money, but you know what you're doing and the value and the uplift is almost guaranteed. Whereas when it comes to other forms of investing, you're usually quite passive. If you're a construction entrepreneur, you're not going to learn all about stock market and start looking at share graphs, price to earnings ratios to try and become, you know, the next Warren Buffett, because it just doesn't fit in with the skill set that you've got. But that said, from a tax point of view, pensions are always tax efficient, especially as a limited company owner. You can put £60,000 a year in and that's fully tax deductible into a pension. But we don't see many construction entrepreneurs do that because they want something tangible, they want something real that they can see and actually know that they're added value. When it comes to pensions, you could put £60,000 in, but then you're going to either give it to an IFA or put it into a tracker fund, which might get you 5 or 10% over the next, on average, per next 10, next one or two decades. But that's a very long-term play. It's tax efficient, but even now, you know, we've got hundreds of clients, and I could probably count on one or two hands the numbers that are actually utilizing their pensions, because they say, no, property is my pension, because they know it, they can see it, it's tangible.
Yeah, and I think for those that didn't fully get everything that Joshua was saying, I think there's an element of, you know, when it's in a pension, you're basically putting money to give it to someone else to invest for you, whereas when you're buying a plot or you're doing it, you're basically controlling the job. You're controlling where that money and how it's spent.
And you can access it. So if you actually wanted to, if you've got a separate property company with a couple of buy-to-lets, that rental income, you can take that out anytime you need to. You can sell a property, you're in control of it. Whereas with a pension, currently that money is locked away until you're 57.
Yeah. I mean, now that you talk about it, I think for any entrepreneur that's still very much like building their building business.
Yeah.
If there's an opportunity to get in on a property deal and run that deal alongside, there's also, I think, advantage of you're not going to get so sidetracked from your day-to-day business because it's just another job. The only thing is you're the client, yeah. You know. And as you said, like rather than having this kind of random Forex app on your phone that's just like distracting you while you're on calls with clients and stuff, it's just the same stuff. So, yeah, that's interesting. I kind of wanted to cover part of this interview, Joshua, with those that are listening to this and like the idea but are not quite there yet, yeah. In terms of maybe the business is not systemized enough to move or to consider moving, or maybe the business is not in a point where they can pull money out, you know, they're reinvesting, but they're on the right track. Yeah. I think it's an important demographic, and I think it's an important time for those business owners because, you know, sometimes those ships are much more agile to turn, and it's a lot easier to, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, getting into an entrepreneur that has a much tidier setup now is a lot easier when it becomes a big machine rather than like, you know, there's just a bit of a mess and then you've got to kind of tidy it up. So what would you say to those that are like listening to this that, yeah, as I said, don't quite hit the criteria we've talked about? Is there things that they can do in their business, the way they're setting them up, the way they're maybe putting money aside, the way they're looking at things, that would make it easier and maybe maximize gains when they do get to that threshold?
Not necessarily, no. It's all about, I'd say, the most important thing is to make sure you've got the best structure for your business, kind of full stop, taking into account everything you're looking to do. When it comes to leaving the UK, as long as you've got things in limited companies, especially still have some clients that buy a property in their own name, but actually if you are moving overseas and you know that's your intention, most of the time you're actually better off buying properties in a limited company, lower tax rates and the more flexibility over the tax rates. You can pay yourself a salary for managing the property portfolio overseas and everything else. So as long as you've got everything in some kind of simple limited company setup, that's going to help keep things kind of simple and straightforward. And even just as a construction business in the UK, the chances are if you're investing in property, you're looking to build wealth, you probably want some kind of group structure. And having that umbrella just keeps it easy when it comes for you taking dividends from your group structure, making sure that they're tax-free, and it gives you a good overview of all the different kind of trading entities you've got going on.
And in terms of what's your advice to those that in terms of like long-term versus short-term, with strategies and optimizing tax, because I think sometimes you could over optimize too early and it stifles your business because you're like so concerned about minimizing, but then you just like wipe out a whole level of clients or whatever. But then sometimes it's better to perhaps just grow and you know, kind of worry about that later. I wonder whether you've got any insights and, you know, about how one can kind of work out what's best for them. Because you also talked about like this kind of idea of over aggressiveness when it comes to tax efficiency, and sometimes that can actually flag things up with the HMRC.
Yeah, I'd say it's always best to get the most tax efficient structure as soon as you can, realistically. The sooner you get it, the better. The main thing, I guess, is the risk of setting it up, getting a really good structure in place, and then the risk there is that business just doesn't go as you expect it to. You don't get the money that you expect. You don't have the profits. So as a result, you don't see the return on investment. You don't see the upside to having this group structure, the extra accountancy costs. You know, if you've got a trust, the kind of different share rights to pass it down. You've got this nice tax efficient structure, but actually you need money. You need wealth to pay tax for this to be a benefit. So that's really the only risk. But as long as you know that with a decent degree of probability, you will be doing the numbers you're planning to, your budget and your forecasting to, then yeah, it makes sense just to get set up in the best possible way, get that tax efficient structure as soon as possible, because to make any changes later on down the line, it's a lot more expensive when it comes to accountancy, professional fees. It's a lot more complicated. Usually there's tax implications to consider. Whereas if you get it set up from the get-go, you can get it set up right and usually at a much lower cost.
Are there any kind of common, like looking back at the clients maybe you've served or maybe even the ones you've had to turn down because you just can't serve, of mistakes that maybe they've made or things that maybe poor advice that they've gotten from somebody or outdated that could kind of shoot yourself in the foot later, or generally is everything kind of fixable given, you know, time? And
usually everything's relatively fixable. It's suppose the only kind of thing there, the biggest mistakes we'd see is just where businesses have had really poor accountancy records. They've had inquiries from HMRC challenging kind of VAT reclaims or corporation tax bills where they think that there's some kind of tax evasion going on because you've not got the paperwork set up to correctly document it. They're probably the only times we've actually had to turn away clients, just because there's too much going on there for us to get stuck in. It wouldn't be worth it from our time to actually help get that sorted. But that would be the biggest one. So as long as you've got, you know, good records, you're not taking cash payments and things like that, because it's just not worth it in the long run when you're trying to grow and scale a decent construction business and stay on the right side of HMRC.
I was just to kind of move on a little bit, because it just came to mind when you were talking, but I was on I was at London Build Expo last week, which is a construction exhibition in London, and they had, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was a stand offering kind of AI powered tax consultancy. Yeah. And it came to mind because obviously I was having this conversation with you today. What is your thoughts around, like, because I've been guilty of using ChatGPT for, you know, some quick advice, some quick tips, when I'm just not sure and I don't necessarily want to, like, incur a cost with my accountant or solicitor, yeah, or something. Where do you see this kind of, like, this space mixing with what you do? Do you see it as a threat? Do you see it as an opportunity? Is it something that you guys at JSM are kind of working with? Or I'm curious what your take on the ground is with it.
Yeah, definitely. So it's definitely an opportunity. So in terms of, yeah, we use a little bit of AI at the minute. So we've actually got our own with ChatGPT. We've set that up. We've put loads of parameters in there, lots of information. And it's something we use, especially when it comes just to kind of ad hoc, simple client queries. It does that with pretty much 100% accuracy. But it does need that human check element, because there are, especially if you're using it, you rely on that advice. For one, if we sent out the wrong bit of advice because it was just copied and pasted from, you know, ChatGPT and it's wrong, okay, we're getting sued. And for you as an entrepreneur, business owner, if you rely on that wrong bit of advice, well, actually, you're probably overpaying taxes or you're going to make a mistake. So, you know, we've got one that's been built and it's pretty much 99% accurate. But for the time being, that 1% inaccuracy can be costly. So it still needs that human element to be checking it up until it gets all the information it needs to be 100% accurate. If it'll get there, we'll see. We're kind of continually improving, testing ours, adding more feedback, adding more information. But even now, it's still not 100% spot on.
So are you using it more from a internal tool to help you guys handle client queries as opposed to something that you provide your clients to then be able to?
We use it for both. So as part of our got an online membership, and as part of that, you get access to our highly customized ChatGPT. It's called TaxGPT, we've called it. And we use it internally as well. So we use it for both.
Oh, that's sweet. So a client could, if they've got a query before necessarily asking you or bugging you guys about it, they can kind of ask them.
Out of hours. Yeah. What should I pay myself this year? Or how much should I put into my pension? Or how should I buy my company car? Or, you know, what van is tax efficient? They can just put that into there and they'll get a response. But we'll say to them, you know, if it is a big decision, just double check it with us and use this as a guideline.
Joshua, this might be a little bit of a, you know, how long's a piece of string question, but we have a new client that does come to you. How long can it typically take for them to kind of experience some of the things that we've been talking about today in terms of, like, having to relocate, but then also to get some of the benefits? Is it something that one should be kind of reaching out to you a couple of years before they kind of are looking to make these changes, or is it something usually that kind of get all your ducks all aligned, and then kind of once that's ready, kind of contact someone like you?
Yeah, realistically, especially if you're looking at moving overseas, that type of tax planning, you don't need to worry about years in advance. You know, we can help get set up. If the buyer's where you're looking at, or even most other places, you can get set up in there within a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. So it's not something you've got to plan too far ahead for. As long as you reach out a couple of months before, then yeah, absolutely, we can help.
Cool. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Joshua. We're going to drop the link to JSM and a Calendly link, I think, for if anyone does want to you know, reach out for your services. But also, I'll put a link in for your own personal website and your YouTube, actually, because yeah, it's highly enjoyable content for anyone that's looking at or scratching their head, I think, thinking, am I just paying too much tax here?
Perfect. Really appreciate that. And if anyone's got any help, anyone needs any help with even just UK accountancy services as well, JSA Partners still in the UK, so more than happy to help construction businesses when it comes to, you know, group structures, systemizing, property investment, or anything else that they might need.
Amazing. Thank you, Joshua.